Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and welcome to Mount Olympus. I am Hercules Invictus. Know, O honored guest, that far from being the mere literary relics of a bygone age, the heroic tales that first emerged in ancient times in and around the Mediterranean Sea are alive and well today. Tale tellers, using media undreamed of by our ancestors, still recount the past, present, and future exploits of Hellenic deities, demigods, heroes, and fabulous beasts. Now, my friend, release the hold of your current reality, relax, and enter the realm of timeless tales. Enter the wondrous world of sword and sandal cinema. And today, I'm very proud to bring you Brian Walker of Brian's Drive-In Theater. Greetings and welcome, Brian. Happy New Year.
A happy New Year to you, Hercules. How are you doing this evening?
I'm doing well. Keeping busy, planning the new audiovisual entertainment. I'm really happy about that. So.
Great. Well, I took delivery of my green screen, so.
Oh, awesome.
Hopefully I can pull it together. And I'm having to bone up on Zoom as well because beginning next Wednesday, I'll be teaching a synchronous online class.
Oh, wow. I remember a year ago when I taught, this was in the more primitive times before Zoom, before Skype, and they had these computer hookups. And I had to teach classes, but the class I was teaching would be repeated in four or five other locations. Mm-hmm. So I had to watch the computer screen as I was talking to see if anybody had any questions or anything, and I had to click on them. It was very confusing, I remember.
Well, this is actually my first experience teaching online. I've always done on site.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've been, a guest lecturer in classes last fall, and those were done online. So I think I got enough of a feel for it. It's just that when it's your name, on the class roster,
yeah.
You want to make sure that you do it right.
I finally found somebody who uses Zoom and can walk me through it. And it turns out that I know people who can edit on YouTube. So
mm-hmm.
That's very encouraging. So I'll start with these very simple things and then I'll learn and progress as I did with the other medium that I brought my shows to.
Sure. I mean, there's a learning curve for everything. And sometimes the stuff can seem daunting or challenging, but if you're patient and if you put enough time into it, you can always muddle through it without having to read too many instructions.
Very, very true. I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to share today.
Well, this is a brand new year. We're only 12 days into it. And you and I have talked about our mutual optimism before. And at the beginning of the year, You like to think, well, I'm going to make some changes. I want to do this. I want to do that. But it's also a time for introspection. Looking back on the previous year, what things could have gone better and
mm-hmm.
such. And I've been looking, back through the website in total today because here in just a couple of weeks, it will celebrate its 23rd birthday.
Congratulations. That is awesome.
Thank you. It's a nice prime number, too. I've been doing a lot of thinking about, the inception of the website and, where the original idea came from. So I thought we would explore that this evening.
That sounds fantastic. And we have to do something to celebrate in a few weeks, or maybe this whole month. We can make it Brian's Drive-In Theater month. We could usher in the new year with the Drive-In Theater.
Mm. Yeah, it's February 1st, so February would be a good month for that. But I won't get to talk to you until, early to mid-February, so I thought we would go ahead and talk about this tonight as sort of a lead-in.
Okay. Sounds great.
And... Well, growing up, I was fortunate to be an only child, and to have quite honestly, back at the time, and that probably was the case. I wish I had siblings now. But back then, you know, it was pretty great being an only child. And I could watch whatever I wanted to watch. And especially on, you know, rainy Saturday afternoons, depending on the syndication package that your local TV stations bought into, you could see some fantastic movies. Chances are mm-hmm. they would be movies. But otherwise, you know, very entertaining and all different genre, you know. You might see adventure such as, you know, a Tarzan movie or maybe film noir. You know, a gangster picture or something like that. And sometimes there were comedies from the 30s and 40s. I mean, Universal produced a lot of pretty solid comedies. They were B's, but they, you know, the acts were, you know, pretty good. And mm-hmm. obviously, you saw Peplums as well.
Yeah.
There were several syndication packages that I can remember seeing on our local TV station, you know, as a kid. And if it was a rainy Saturday afternoon, or if I were in, you know, close proximity to the house, chances are I was going to be planted in front of that TV watching these Peplum movies. And the oldest section of the drive-in is the Peplum section, the Many Faces of Hercules section. The drive-in website and the Many Faces of Hercules page within the drive-in started on the same day, which is February 1st, 1990.
Wow.
And, you know, I long loved these movies. They were kind of hard to find information on. You know, this was in the early days of the internet, and there just wasn't a whole lot of information about, well, I mean, for lack of a better word, esoterica.
Uh-huh.
There was quite a bit of general information available, but if you really wanted to do some research, if you were thinking about a movie that you saw when you were a kid and you're trying to figure out who the star was and what the name of the picture is because you want another copy of it on VHS or maybe even DVD, you know, even back then you would head to the internet and likely find very little or nothing.
Right.
About so many of these films, and that's kind of where the website started. And I was fortunate enough to find kind of an audience really fast, and so many people, you know, especially in the first few years, contributed. I mean, lots of information, photographs. So that was a big one. It was just so hard to find pictures at the time. And, you know, I only had, you know, so many lobby cards and so many press books, you know, of my own to scan, you know, and to put pictures in. So, you know, it wasn't just my effort, actually. It was the efforts of a lot of people who, you know, willingly contributed information and sometimes would send me things. I can't remember his name right now, but somebody once sent me a complete set of lobby cards for one of Gordon Scott's Tarzan, or for one of Gordon Scott's Peplum films.
Oh, wow.
And they were in beautiful shape. I mean, there's not a crease in any of them. I don't think there are any pinholes or anything like that. I mean, these were in good shape. The cards are a little disappointing in that I think Gordon only appears in like two or three of them. The rest are of, you know, different characters in the movie, which is kind of odd, you know, for lobby cards. You'd think you'd want the star, you know, in the majority of the cards, but it's not the way it was set up necessarily. And, you know, I got to communicate with a few of the people who were profiled on my website. I was never able to speak to, you know, sort of the guy who started it all, Steve Reeves. I was never able to communicate with him because he passed away about 2 years after my site came online. And I was a pretty busy guy back then. You know, I was trying to pull the website together. I was, you know, working full time and such, and I just didn't get around to it. And, you know, that's a shame. I know we've talked about this before, but, you know, if there's somebody that you want to try to interview or talk to, you know, sooner is better than later.
That's very true. I found that, as you know, with Sergio Chiani, a.k.a. Alan Steele. I tried to track him down, but not aggressively. You know, it's just something I would do. And then finally, in one of the Facebook groups, somebody said, oh, I know him. And, you know, I'll just talk to him and hook you up. And within that week, it was approaching, I believe, his 80th birthday, and he died. So
right.
I missed my only chance. I was very saddened, too, because I like to thank people directly for, you know, providing something of value to me. And I had the opportunity to do that with you. And now we're doing this show together, which is, like, incredibly awesome. I wanted to say thank you to Sergio Chiani, but alas, it didn't happen. So now I have to be content with having the most active Sergio Chiani fan site. So at least I was able to do that to say thank you.
But, you know, I mean, he was an actor. I'm sure, you know, wherever he is now, he's looking down at you, and he's very pleased that, you know, think about it for a minute. You know, wouldn't it do your soul, you know, some good to think that there was still somebody left on Earth still fighting for your cause? I mean, I think that's fantastic.
Well, thank you. Yes, that's a really great way of looking at it. And I must say that I found your site you know, in its early days. And you're right, there was nothing on the Internet. And that's why when I found it, and knowing how I look for things, I was probably typing in Hercules to see what popped up, because that's been a preoccupation of mine since childhood, or Hercules movie or Steve Reeves or something like that. And one of the links brought me to your site, and then that was it. I was hooked and would go there whenever I could and read the new material. And then you started adding other things to it, and the horror and the science fiction I resonated with greatly, more so than some of the other categories. But there was always something of value, something of interest, and I was very grateful that you did that.
Well, and you know, it was not only a public journey, but also kind of a private one as well, because I wanted to know this information. And like I said, at the time, you just couldn't find it. Of course, now, you know, you can, if you're willing to, you know, go pretty deep on a search, and if you're willing to translate, you can find tons of information. So many old sources have been scanned, and you know, the information is out there for pretty much anybody to access. And it's a wonderful thing. It really is. You know, and you don't even have to be near a computer terminal. You can search from your phone and pretty much find, you know, the graphics that you're looking for, or, you know, maybe even a film that's online, either on YouTube or archive.org, you know, some other streaming service. I mean, all of that, you know, we now take for granted, but, you know, when my website came online, there just wasn't anything like that, especially for these films. There was just so very little. Some people were doing like screen captures, and, you know, I bought a small apparatus to do screen captures with, and it did horrible screen captures. But I used them, and if you reduced the size down to a thumbnail, they didn't look too bad. But at regular size, they were kind of pixelated, and they left a lot to be desired. You know, as we progressed and as I got more and better photos, I would replace you know, a poorer quality photo with a better one. And as I got better with Adobe Photoshop, especially when it comes to, you know, retouching pictures and touching up digital images and fixing cracks and creases and things like that, I was able to, you know, improve on the visual for the website as well. And that's a big part of it for me. what was making you, because I, you know, I didn't have access to, you know, MP4s or anything like that. And it is a mostly static website. You know, I wanted to give the illusion of a lot of graphics, and that's why, you know, each actor page has kind of a faded out picture of the actor in usually a complimentary or maybe even an eye-catching color. That was sort of my way, you know, to bring the graphic, you know, the visual into it. And I got to thank some people who contributed information that I can think of on this page. Gordon Mitchell, I know we've talked about him a lot. He sent. I still have, I think, every envelope that he sent, and they really were care packages in a way. He must have spent a lot of money, you know, just on postage alone. But he sent all kinds of, like, you know, newspaper cutouts, magazine cutouts from Europe. Just kind of bits and pieces of a scrapbook, really.
Uh-huh.
And it gave me a lot of great information. And all the while hinting that he kind of knew where all the bodies were buried. And I was always hoping that he would kind of outlive everybody and be able to write a book. And, you know, unfortunately, he passed away all of a sudden, you know, in 2003. But informed my website so greatly because, you know, he was over there, you know, sort of, you know, close to the beginning of the Peplum wave. And then, you know, starting out as, you know, a high school teacher, and then, you know, moving into, you know, some acting, he was also in the Mae West Review, which it was a pretty prominent, you know, visual role for him. But mm-hmm. you know, when he went to Rome to make these films, he just sort of fell in love with acting, and that's what he did for the rest of his life. It's kind of an interesting journey. When you look at, you know, a lot of the filmographies for these actors, you know, for some of them, like Mark Forrest, for example, he only did Peplum, you know, and when the genre faded, well, he was done. You know, he didn't make any more films. But you know, somebody like Gordon Mitchell did all kinds of, he wasn't afraid to take a supporting role. He was really good at being a villain. He's really good in spaghetti westerns, you know, in a villainous role. He's in horror films. He sort of transcends, you know, every genre. I think he did a little bit of everything. And he even did some production work and, you know, had his own movie studio in Italy for a while. He did say that the red tape in Italy was kind of daunting, and it just got to be such a hassle that he gave it up.
Oh, that's a shame.
Yeah, it is. But I mean, you know, with regulation and such, you know, things like that can happen. Brad Harris is another person who sent me some information. Early on, I would have to compile a filmography, and you would always miss something. Or,
right.
You know, for a few actors, some roles were attributed to them, you know, that they really hadn't been in these films or hadn't played these roles. Well, he was very meticulous in going through the filmography, and we made some deletions, and we made quite a few additions. Because he was an accomplished actor, you know, just like Gordon Mitchell, in that he did a variety of roles, and he produced a lot of his stuff, which is really smart. I mean, it's difficult, you know, but if you produce it, you own it,
right?
And that's a very smart thing. That's good business acumen, if you ask me. And although he wasn't really in Peplums, you know, Dave Draper is part of the Many Faces of Hercules because he did a syndicated, you know, a local Southern California syndicated David the Gladiator show in the early 60s, where he ran Peplum Films. It's a shame that none of those shows are on YouTube right now, because those would be fascinating.
Yes, they would be.
To watch. But Dave and his wife Laurie have you always? You, I hear from them every year or two, and they've stayed in touch, which has been nice. And like I said early on, they contributed some information as well, which I found extremely helpful. Sometimes people, some actors found. People like you and me to be an imposition when it comes to getting information from them and talking to them. I've run into that here and there, but
that
it's been my experience with a lot of actors that they love talking about their careers. They're dying for somebody, to ask them about it. So going back to what we were talking about a few minutes ago, reach out to those people now while they're still with us.
I'm looking forward to the crossover shows that we have planned this quarter, because so far I've heard from two of the other three people involved, and they said yes. So I'm just waiting to hear from one more person, then I'll go ahead and move forward. But I think that'll be great, because even though Steve Reeves isn't still around, Steve Reeves International is still around, and George Helmer
right.
is at the helm of that, and Dave Dowling co-authored several books with him. So they'll be available to talk to. And between your knowledge of the cinema and their knowledge of pretty much all aspects of his life, that should be a really fascinating show, just to get everybody who knows so much to share information. Also, I'm looking forward to you with Bill Hinburn from Super Strength Training, because he's like preserved Reg Park's workouts, among other things, and many other old-time greats, in terms of what they did with their workout programs and what they ate, and any other esoteric exercising practices they have indulged in, like muscle control, which I played with for quite a while. That's another story. So I'm looking forward to these shows, where we kind of team up. I'm sure that the scholars from the edge of time, Nicholas Dyack and Michelle Brittany, they know a lot about the new peplum and the Egyptian peplums. So we can have some really, really interesting crossover shows. So I'm really looking forward to that for this year.
Well, and something you said about Reg Park, he was another person who, kind of like Brad Harris, was a really good businessman. And his business was fitness. It was, that was his major interest. And the films were just a sideline. I'm sure it improved his reputation. Worldwide exposure. With your name associated, I that was probably fantastic for his business. But he appeared in so few films. And I probably said this a million times too, but it's interesting in that he was a novice actor, and ultimately didn't have a great interest in making films or acting. But he's in two of my favorite peplums.
Yes, mine too.
And it's really interesting how somebody who kind of made these films on a lark was able to make such an impact.
He inspired Arnold Schwarzenegger initially by example, and then later on actually mentored a young Arnold at his home in South Africa. Many people had a lot of good things to say about Reg Park, because he was this mentor figure. He shared information. He was good-hearted. I've heard nothing but good things about him.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's amazing to hear because, you know, sometimes you hear some, you know, not so kind things, you know,
yeah.
about the people, your idols, you know, the people that you like. And it's always nice when, you know, there's somebody, you know, for whom you've never heard anything bad.
That's very true. And these films are still very impactful. I was talking to Michael DelRussi the other day, and I was telling him when I first started my Age of Heroes, which are kind of like social programs, one of the ways I described it is I'd ask people if they'd ever seen the Peplum movies. And then I would talk about Jason and the Argonauts or, you know, several other Peplum films where, like, Peplum stars, like where Ursus and Hercules and so forth teamed up for a little while. And I would see people's eyes light up. If they'd seen these movies, they got it. and it spoke to something inside of them that wanted to be a Peplum hero. And so for a while, that became almost like the selling point for the Age of Heroes. You know, it's like, you know, you might not be able to fight giant monsters and topple tyrants, except for metaphorically. We have a lot of monsters in the form of social ills, you know, or problems. So we can band together. Together, like Jason and the Argonauts, and, you know, like address these things, you know, and topple tyrannical bureaucracies and, you know, things like that. And again, people resonated and they wanted to be a part of it. And a lot of times when people work in the human services, you get burnt out.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like all the good intentions that brought you into a field where you want to help people and work with people. It feels a lot of times like you're the velvet glove on the iron fist of the state, you know, sometimes, especially since a lot of programs are government funded and so forth. Being able to rekindle that feeling of wanting to help, you know, wanting to do something good, that motivated a lot of people also. And one of the big initiatives we did in Brooklyn, this was the time when the digital divide was happening.
Mm-hmm.
So all of a sudden there were haves and have-nots with information. And if you didn't have a computer, computers mm-hmm. were very expensive, you were being left behind. So the monster was Ginninga Gap, the gaping void of Norse mythology. And we had our Argonauts together, and it was all sorts of different people. And we opened up a drop-in computer center in Brooklyn where anybody could drop by and learn how to use computers and use computers. And eventually Bill Gates gave everybody, you know, all the libraries computers, so the problem kind of went away. But when we were addressing it, that hadn't been done. You know, and nobody did this for money. And there were a lot of nonprofit organizations and people involved. Later on, once it was up and running, we were able to write grants and get it funded to pay rent and things like that for the drop-in center.
Right.
But people did it because it was a cool thing to do, you know, and that was amazing. And the very fact that happened has fueled all my subsequent efforts since that time.
Well, and, you know, in a microcosm, you've just described sort of how the website came about. It was just a bunch of people, you know, contributing information. And information that, you know, I did not have, you know, a written text that I could you refer to, you know, oftentimes. And was very appreciative of that information. And like I said, the graphics, the photos, and such. I tried to, you know, touch up the photos, as I said, you know, best as I could, in order to, you know, you make the contrast pop more. A lot of the pictures are in black and white,
mm-hmm.
because that's just the way those, you know, 8x10 glossies that you ran, you know, in the newspaper to try to get people to come and see the movie. They were all black and white. You know, the peplums are, you know, 99.9% color, thank goodness. Because, you know, with an adventure, color just, You know, some movie genre don't need color at all, you know, obviously like film noir. And peplum's the exact opposite. I think color is a must in a peplum film because, you know, there's a lot of pageantry in it, some great costumes, you know, beautiful outdoor settings. It'd be a shame not to have, you know, a nice Technicolor image of that.
Yes.
So I mean that's kind of an interesting thing about peplums. They started in the late 50s and ran to I think about 1965. In that time period, you were still seeing some black and white movies in production, but fortunately, you know, the producers that were around, you know, did go with the color. I think you know, they are epics. They are spectacles. I think they deserved it.
Yes. Yeah, I think so too. And even though often, because we didn't have a color TV growing up, I don't remember when I first saw things on a color TV. So, you know, everything was in black and white. But when I first started watching them in color, even though sometimes the color was washed out, it was still color. And it added a whole other dimension to the experience.
Well, that really, and you're right, that really depended on the device that you were watching these films on. That's a good point. When I was a kid, my dad had the biggest collection of clapped out televisions. He worked in electronics for the Baby Bells, and people would just like randomly give him like a 3 or 4 year old TV that had some like shot tubes or something like that. So we pretty much had a TV in every room. Some of them were black and white and some of them were color. So I guess I was, you know, I was lucky enough to have a TV in my bedroom. At first I had a black and white and then it moved to color. But I never thought about that before, but I guess you're right. You didn't really have a choice in that, did you?
No, I didn't. And I was very surprised at what the actual colors were once I saw things in color. If it's in black and white, your imagination, you know, assigns colors. And a lot of times the colors were not exactly what the actual colors were.
Well, and then that's another thing, too. A lot of these films do use very vivid imagery. They're obviously, you know, trying to you know, draw the audience in, and they are beautifully shot, you know, for the most part, you know, very thoughtfully staged. It's a shame that, you know, the film that I'm watching right now, which is The Triumph of Hercules with Dan Battis, it's a pan and scan version. And I mean, you know how I feel about that. I know why they did it, but boy, what a shame. I mean, I just wish that the original widescreen version's got to be out there somewhere, I hope.
Eventually, because the technology on like video games has been evolving very quickly, and video games are almost cinematic now. And
that's true.
Experimented with kind of like do your own movie, where at various points in the movie you have choices, and then that affects how the movie plays out. I can see a lot of these old movies, once we're a little past where we currently are, but not even too far, being captured in 3D and allowing you to immerse yourself and to be, you know, like one of the characters in the movie.
Well, and, you know, I think you're right. I do think that sort of technology is probably not too far off in the distance. Not so out of reach of, you know, sort of your average viewer, really.
Right.
I don't think it's going to be that long. And I also think that's going to, you know, in some ways revolutionize entertainment as well. Because for, you know, for old movie buffs like us, wouldn't it be fascinating to, you know, insert yourself in Citizen Kane?
Yeah.
Or the Maltese Falcon, one of my favorite movies. I know that I know film noir is not your genre, but that's just an amazing film. That would be a fantastic experience. I hope that I hope I live long enough to appreciate and maybe even indulge in it.
I think they will, because now they're able to bring back actors who are no longer with us and have them, you know, play roles in movies. And although to the very discerning eye, you know, you could tell that it's an artificial image and not an actual person, it gets really close, you know, and they have many games that are based on like other properties, where the games are created to immerse you into the story as one of the characters, and some of them have you play like a character that you made up in the version of the story. But I really can see things evolving in that direction, especially now with the you know, with the 3D technology that we have.
Mm-hmm. I think you're absolutely right.
Yeah, my son has 3D goggles, and I tried them on one day. Mm-hmm. And again, you're in a weird reality, and still a little primitive, but you feel like you're in a 3D environment, and it's really amazing.
Well, and, you know, look at the development of all of this, you know, technology, you know, for the benefit of the visual, and how far it's come just in the last 40 years. You know, in 1980, for example, I was fascinated by the fact that you could buy, you know, a videotape machine and, you know, tape broadcasts. I mean, it kind of blew my little mind. And since then, I mean, you know, we've come to expect that technology, you know,
I mean,
through DVR or, I've got a huge DVD collection, but DVDs have, you know, sort of become passé, although I'm still a big, physical media fan, because I don't have to rely on streaming. I can call this stuff up anytime I want to, as long as I still have access to a working DVD player.
Or a computer. The computers play DVDs, you know, like if you have like a...
Well, only PCs. Apple's gotten away from that, which I'm not going to get into an Apple versus PC discussion, because there are things about both platforms I really like. But I will say this, Apple's awfully shy when it comes to ports.
Hmm.
You know, my cheap $400 touchscreen Hewlett Packard laptop has ports all over the place. It's got HDMI, USB. I mean, it has micro SD card slot. You name it. And our MacBook, I mean, it's got one USB port, and that's it. You know, so I got to give the advantage there to the PC. But you know, between the two platforms, though, my website was built, you know, using a PC. Even though it was always pretty heavy on the graphics, I did build it, you know, using PC technology.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to them. I don't have time to play the games anymore, although in concept I really like it. I just can't budget in the time. But I know I picked up like Assassin's Creed. They had one with ancient Greece, and it was during the time of the Persian War or the Peloponnesian War, I'm sorry. And they had some characters that existed at that time. And if you saw 300, you know, you could easily fit that in there too. And it was again, you could travel. You didn't have to follow the story. My son went to Lemnos, the island that we're from, and just visited when he played the game. Because they built the island in there, you know, and it's a pretty open-ended world. So the characters were people you could interact with there, and you could interact with the gods. And I can see Steve Reeves or Reg Park or Gordon Lewis. You know, I could see entering these movies playing through the movie as the character. That would be really great, and trying different things at different times and seeing if anything different would happen.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think you would gravitate, let's say you were able to insert yourself into a peplum, would you want to be the hero or do you want to be the villain?
The hero.
Oh, okay. Okay. You know, interestingly, of course, I think everybody wants to identify with the protagonist, but I actually think it would be more fun to play the villain. I think that's probably the direction I would go in.
And that's I used to run role playing games until fairly recently with the pandemic for kids at libraries, for older people, and I found that people choose one of two main paths. One is idealized self, you know, where it's like a more heroic version of who they are.
Mm-hmm.
And the other one is shadow. So people would pick something that isn't like, you know, what they normally are, just to try it out for size. So the most extreme example that I saw was there was one person who was playing the game, and she was very religious and and evangelical and stuff like that. And she created a character who was like a temple prostitute and a thief. So that was the most extreme shadow, example that was created. But other people, again, they'd be pretty straight laced, but they'd create the thieves or assassins. That makes a lot of sense, what you said. And if you like playing the type of villains that are in these films, it would be a lot of fun.
I think it would be. If I look back to, let's say a Euro spy movie or a James Bond movie, the villain, that's the fun role. That's where you get to, overact, maybe chew on some scenery. I think that those parts are probably the most fun for an actor to play.
Mm-hmm.
I think it would be, interestingly, I think it would be harder to be the protagonist, to be the hero, to be the good guy, because how do you bring interest to that? It's kind of hard to do. Whereas if you are the villain, you can do outrageous things to draw attention to your character. You can be devious, you can be evil, and you can have a lot of fun with it. So I think that's definitely the way that I would go. I just think it would be more fun, especially if it came to role play.
There are games. I remember the one of the games I used to play years ago was Elder Scrolls. That came out with Arena first, and then they had a series of them, and I think they're still around. And there, the game is totally open-ended also, so you can be anything you want, and you don't have to follow the adventure in the game. So I've known people who've opened up stores and became merchants, people who sought out vampires to become vampires or werewolves to become werewolves. So people will tell all these stories. And I just remembered something. The Matrix, one of the chapters in that film franchise, unfolded in a video game and in a online immersive type of a computer game. And they had the actors film scenes for those and continued parts of the story in these interactive experiences that people would have. People have tried to do this, in various ways. I don't know why I'm fixing on that tonight, but I'm just feeling it very strongly that I would enjoy the idea of that, exploring it and maybe even trying it out.
Oh, I think it would be a blast. And like I said, I just hope that the technology gets good enough, fast enough for you and I to enjoy it.
Yes, me too.
Because, time marches on. When I first started, the Many Faces of Hercules, most of these actors were still with us. They were still alive. And now relatively few of them are. Mark Forrest, Thankfully, is still with us and active on Facebook, which is great.
Mm-hmm.
Kirk Morris is still with us. Ed Fury, who is now 92, 93 years old.
Wow.
Peter Lupus, who's in his late 80s. Let's see, Samson Burke. I mean, he's about 90, I think, and still alive. Reg Lewis, who is the star of today's movie of the day, Fire Monsters Against the Son of Hercules.
A classic.
It's a lot of fun to watch. Too. Has one of my favorite British actresses in it, Margaret Lee, who was in some Eurospy stuff. She did a little bit of everything. She peplum, Eurospy, comedy, you name it. For a later show, I was going to try to pull it off today, but I wasn't able to do it. I would like to talk about some of the people that you see in supporting roles in these films. If you watch enough of these films, and I'm sure this has happened to you too, you'll say, well, wait a minute, you were in the movie I watched last week. You know, a lot of these people, rotated, through the genre. I've started working on, plans for one of our episodes to be about the supporting actors. Didn't quite pull it off today, but I do have the beginnings of it, and that'll be something to look forward to later this year, I think.
I look forward to that, and we could even do one supporting actor an episode. You know, just highlight more of them. You know, just have like a 5-10 minute segment.
Well, and some of the supporting actors, had very lengthy careers, and I won't tip my hand, but there are a couple of them that I've always wanted to build pages for, and I actually do have the architecture for pages for them. It's just that I was never able to find enough content or enough photos or biographical information. Which is a shame, but if I keep working on it, if I keep searching, maybe it'll happen.
And even on the internet, some things don't have a lot of photos. You know, like you'll type in different.
No, they don't.
And there's only like less than a handful of photos out there because that the same ones keep coming up in the searches, and that's a shame too.
It is, and you're right. Although it does seem like we have an embarrassment of data, with the internet. You're right. It is amazing how sometimes how lacking it all really is, and information does fall through the cracks. Unfortunately, it shouldn't. Especially not now, but it does. Some of these films are in danger of being forgotten. A lot of films that were made before 1950, the majority of films made before 1950 are no longer existing. And I think it's up to us to keep the to pass the torch, to keep it going.
I know with the Hercules movies, there was a Hercules movie in like 1918 or something. I haven't been able to find anything other than mentions of it. And then there was in India, a Son of Hercules movie, and not from the official lineup, but a Son of Hercules movie nonetheless. And there was a few Hercules movies. And one of them, a few people sent me a picture, and it was the same picture. And that's it. There's a mention of it, the name of the person who starred in it, and that's it. That's all that's known about it. And nobody can track down a copy.
And, I hate to say it, but, you're lucky if there are any stills left from it, much less, the actual film itself. So much of that stuff's lost. That old silver nitrate film that they used was highly flammable, and could sometimes spontaneously catch on fire. That happens fairly often enough to ruin some actors' catalogs, you know, especially from the silent era. You know, things like that did happen. And even at that, though, I think it's amazing that the information that we do have collected now, and it brings us together worldwide. You know, there are people all over the globe who are interested in these films and who loved these movies, you know, both when they came out or if they're younger, when they were first exposed to them.
Mm-hmm.
Which I think is fabulous. And I think that will, you know, help people like you and me you keep these movies alive and keep people interested in them. And I know you're probably a bigger fan than I am about this, but maybe you do something new with it. You know,
yeah.
Bring it back and, you know, make it appeal more to current audiences.
I'm in my own small way. That's one of the things I planned for this year. And I've dropped hints here and there and had some conversations, mostly with you. But I am planning to do something different with the old movies and to allow people to experience them in a new way. So I'm really excited, and I spend as much time as I possibly can toward doing that.
Yeah, and, you know, that's another thing to look forward to, you know, with 2021. You know, last year probably wasn't the easiest year for most of us.
I do think I
escaped relatively unscathed. I consider myself to be pretty lucky in that respect. But I will say this, it's also been challenging, you know, at the same time.
Yes.
And sort of isolating, lonely. There's some people that I'm very close to that I haven't been able to see for the past year.
Same here.
Exactly. You know, it happens. It's happening to everybody. And, you know, thankfully for the technology, you know, I can have, you know, I can see my mother's face every day when I talk to her at 6 o'clock in the evening.
Mm-hmm.
Or I can FaceTime or Zoom with my friends in Atlanta. I can, you know, I mean, there's just, the technology has really helped. It would have been harder during the last pandemic to stay
yeah.
social than it is now. And I think it is up to us to learn how to use the technology and see what things that we can employ to make it more welcoming. And to make it more of a collaborative effort.
Yes, it is very challenging, and I'm grateful for all the technology that does allow us to connect in different ways. And I'm very excited with the Zoom and the Skype and the FaceTime. I've never used the FaceTime, the other two have used. Because again, they're the TV telephones that were promised to us in the Jetsons that I thought we definitely have, along with the moving sidewalks and the floating cars. They've been tried here and there, so maybe one day we'll have those too. And the silver clothes.
Yeah, well, the moving sidewalk thing, that's starting to sound better and better all the time.
Yeah,
you're right, and I can't tell you what a comfort it is. I live hundreds of miles away from both of my parents. They live in two different states, and it is kind of a comforting thing just to be able to use FaceTime to see them, to make sure that they're all right. You know, because mm-hmm. They're obviously, if they're my parents, they're getting on in years. You know. And it is a comfort so that I can see them, so I don't have to imagine, you know, that they look all right or that their color's good. You know, I can actually see their faces. It's been a big help. Now, I have seen both my parents. I did see them over the holidays, and I got to tell you, I've had so many COVID tests, you know, over the last few weeks. I don't care if I ever see another Q-tip again.
Well, I'm glad that you're in a position to get the tests. And,
Well, the community that I live in, there's all kinds of community testing. So, and it's free for anybody who wants to take advantage of it.
Good.
Also, my employer, pays for our tests as well. So I've got two options right there. And I got to tell you, I mean, for a smaller town, I do live in a college town, but for a smaller town, being here during the pandemic hasn't been such a bad place to be.
That is great. Yeah, I'm in a small town too, and it's a nice place to be. I miss going to New York. I miss going to a lot of the places.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go. But this is a nice place to be. There are a lot worse places to be. So I find myself feeling very grateful for where I am as well.
I do miss the travel. You know, that's one thing about the pandemic. I do miss the travel. You know, I mean, that's not to say that I haven't, you know, done a little bit of traveling here or there, but it's certainly been far more limited, you know, much more muted over the last year than it ever has been before. And the trips are really quick too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like I said, you have to get tested before you go, and then you have to quarantine. I'll be glad when we get through this.
Me too. I'll be glad when it's done. Hopefully this will be the year that we can start seeing some, even though this year started pretty extreme on a lot of levels as
it
well.
Did.
And on
but,
that note,
you know, we got nowhere to go but up.
Yes, that's very true. And as you said, when we started tonight's show, we're both optimists. So there you go.
I think you have to be.
How can folks visit Brian's Drive-In Theater and get in contact with you?
You can go to any search engine and type in Brian's Drive-In Theater, and that will take you to the website, or you can key it in yourself. The URL is briansdriveintheater.com. That's Brian with an I. And if you'd like to follow me on social media, the platform I'm most active on is Facebook. And if you are on Facebook, you can type in Brian's Drive-In Theater and it'll take you to my page.
Incredibly awesome. And I look forward to our adventures in this coming year. And I might have asked you this before. Have you ever thought to put the drive-in theater out as like a coffee table book with images and information?
Well, you know, somebody, this was a long time ago, I want to say 15 years ago, somebody approached me with an idea like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't be opposed to the idea, but, you know, on my coffee table, I've got an iPad right now.
Okay.
And that's sort of the ultimate coffee table book. It can be anything that you want it to be.
Yes.
And I really think that that's one way that technology has probably changed things, even for me, you know. I'm kind of a slave to it at this point.
Okay, well, I would if you did come out with one, I would definitely buy it because it's very cool.
Well, thank you.
Thanks for everything you've done, Brian. Thank you for the drive-in theater and all your other efforts to preserve. I look forward to our next conversation, and may this year be healthier, happier, more prosperous than the ones before.
Thank you, Hercules. Take care and good night.
Good night. And good night to everybody who joined us, whether you joined us live or later on demand. We're going to close with, as we always do, If You Can Dream with Virginia Ackley.
If you can dream, if you can fly, then your heart can touch the sky, but only if you can dream. If love is true and love is real, pain and sorrow soon will heal, but only if